the Jaguar Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, I'm excited to talk with you tonight about Auburn's big win over the weekend. It was an awesome game, came right down to the wire, and Auburn pulled it out 75-74. We took on a team that made it to the second round in the NCAA tournament last season. Had all five of their starters back, and in a sellout crowd of over 9,000, I guess, at Auburn Arena, the Tigers took it to UAB and put them down. And I was very excited. That was a fun game to watch. And it made me happy all weekend. I wish that we hadn't been off. You know, the football team hadn't had an off week this week, but at least we had a good basketball game to watch, right?
I hate to break it to you.
What?
They weren't off.
No, they were off. We played Georgia next week, right? And then Idaho and Alabama.
No, it was this week.
Well, we played Georgia this week?
We did.
Well, I assume we won.
No, we didn't.
What? What?
Oh,
nope.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. You hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
Blame yourself.
The Sanford and Son is kind of how I felt in the second half of this game. I don't
I would talk about the Georgia game, but
I don't have facts to back this up.
So I really don't know. I was just prepared to talk about the UAB Auburn basketball game tonight. We have a football game to talk about. I must have blanked that. I think I did a self lobotomy on myself with a rusty knife and some scotch tape and kind of dug that part out of my brain because I know nothing about this football game of which you speak. Why don't you fill me in a little bit here? What happened?
Well, let me try and describe some things that happened, and we'll see if it comes back to you.
Yeah.
Auburn and Georgia played on Saturday. It was a low-scoring, ugly defensive football game, and Auburn's defense played very well, and they only gave up 13 points. But Georgia also returned a punt for a touchdown, and Auburn could only score 10 points in the game. They scored a touchdown on the opening drive, didn't score again until the end of the game when they kicked a field goal and they were in desperation mode. And basically...
Well, no, Auburn had 13. I'm looking at
13. I'm sorry.
Look at the score.
Because it was 10-10, and then Auburn kicked a field goal at the end. So it was 20-13, and Auburn kicked a field goal at the end to bring it within one score. But it was a complete offensive meltdown. The passing game was terrible. We played both quarterbacks, Jeremy Johnson and Sean White, and Sean White was clearly hobbled, completely ineffective. I'm not sure he should have been in the game. And, you know, he was basically playing at a key turning point moment in the game, and he was... Because he's injured, he was completely ineffective. And on top of that, regardless of the quarterback that was in the game, Auburn did not throw the ball downfield at all. And so all the Georgia guys came up sort of the line of scrimmage. And then despite that, we ran the ball very well throughout the game, but we just kind of forgot that we could run the ball at key points in the game and chose not to. And despite all of that, we still had a chance to win the game. And Ricardo, you know, we drove down the field in the fourth quarter, and Ricardo Lewis was once again set to be the hero, and then he fumbled the ball at the one-yard line, and Georgia recovered, which was one of the most painful parts of the game, just because you thought at that point we were going to make the play to you know, there. So it was a very tough game. This was, you know, the only way that Georgia could win the game was have it be a low scoring, run oriented kind of game, defensive game, and that's what it was. So,
well, actually, I did know. I just tried to forget. Here are the six things that I listed last night when I finally got to watch it. My wife had to take Maddie to a college day type thing for, you know, high school kids. And so I just didn't watch it. I recorded it and waited. And it was actually kind of funny. We were going to eat barbecue from the local new barbecue place. And so right at halftime, I said, all right, I'll go get some barbecue. We'll just pause it again. And I drove up to the barbecue place and I pulled in the parking lot and started walking in the front door. And I could see through all the windows that they had like six TVs with football on. And I'm like, oh no, the score's going to go by, or they're going to say something, you know, like, and now here's some highlights from that big, you know, win earlier today. And so I ordered, looking like down at the counter. I think the guy thought I was something wrong with me. I was looking down at the counter, trying not to look at the TVs, and I ordered. And then I went and stood out in like the little entryway for 35 minutes waiting on the food. Like everybody that came through thought I was the greeter, you know? and finally I got my food and jumped in the car and flew back, and we finished watching the game fairly late for an 11 o'clock game. But here's a few things I noted afterward. Number one, I pointed out this is 2 years in a row we scored a touchdown on the opening drive against Georgia and then didn't score another touchdown the rest of the game. And somebody pointed out it's actually happened like 5 of the last 7 years or something ridiculous. Mm. Number two, the defense did play great, but you can't expect a 10-3 lead to hold up for four quarters. I mean, I know that Tommy Tuberville wants us to believe that, but – you know, not today. As you said before, that kind of football doesn't exist anymore, really, and you can't expect that. So it was kind of a wasted defensive performance, though it was good to see. Number three, I agree with you about Ricardo. I did not want Ricardo to be the GOAT or one of the GOATs because, you know, he wrote the book on ripping bloody Georgia hearts out of their chests and showing it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Bouncing it off of another player's helmet, catching it, running in the end zone with their beating heart. So he did not deserve to go out that way, and that really bothers me. Another one, I hate that the special teams mistake was the difference in the score because they've been so good all year, and they were good in this game other than that one play.
Yep.
Another one, between the two quarterbacks, we had a quarterback that we don't trust his arm, and a quarterback that we don't trust his leg. And we kind of bounced back and forth, which one would we rather live or die with? And it turned out, you know, neither ultimately. I really am puzzled what happened in the second half, and we'll get to that. And then the last thing, we did play the second half without our starting center, as far as I know, and I haven't heard anything on him since then. We had several players that were injured in this game, and it seemed like they all popped right back up and went back in after being checked out by Dr. Andrews. But I don't know what happened to Golston, and that concerns me. But it seemed like we weren't the same team after he got hurt. But yeah, that was my observations. I'm at a loss as to what happened in the second half. Now, I have a few other thoughts in the more macro scheme of things that we'll get to over the course of the show. But that was pretty much my main thoughts on that game.
I to prepare for tonight, I went back and watched the second half again, and I went through the play-by-play of the...
You're a giver, John. You give for our audience. You suffer for your art.
Yeah, believe me, it was not any better this time. But I went back and went through the play-by-play of the end of the game, and I want to read it to you because there's parts of this that you're just going to bang your head against the desk, okay?
Okay, here we go.
So late in the third quarter now, it's 10-10. Georgia has just scored to make it 10-10.
Right.
Okay? They kick off to us. Sean is in at quarterback, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What would you do now? Well, let's just think of that thought, okay? What Auburn does with Sean in a quarterback is throw three incomplete passes in a row to Ricardo Lewis and then punt.
Yep.
And after Georgia scores, knowing we're teetering on the brink, we throw three incomplete passes to Ricardo and punt it back to him. Georgia gets the ball. Okay.
Hey, do you know? I know where you're going with this, but let me just interrupt you for a second. Did you hear what Gus said going into halftime to the reporter?
I don't remember.
He said, "We got to run the ball more in the second half. We sure got to run the ball more in the second half."
Yeah.
That's what he said.
In the first half, we averaged like 8.5 yards a carry. Yes. Okay. So in the game, you know, we come out of this key situation, the game's tied. Georgia's killing us in time of possession and wearing out our defense. We throw three incomplete passes. All right. So our defense stops them. We get the ball back. But we get the ball back at our own 7-yard line. Okay. That was a big problem.
Yeah.
So first play, hey, a run, Javon Robinson for 2 yards. Second play, another run, Javon Robinson for 5 yards. It's third and 2 or 3, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We change quarterbacks, put Jeremy Johnson in. He gets sacked for 7 yards, and we punt. Okay?
Yep. I remember it clearly.
That was a gigantic play in the game. Yes. Third and 3, we run, you know, for 7 yards the first 2 downs. We don't run again. We try and pass the ball. He gets sacked. We have to punt again. That's the punt where they ran it back for a touchdown.
Ugh.
Okay?
Hold on. Again. Okay. I'm banging my head on the desk like you said.
Okay. All right. Now, they kick off to us. We put Sean back in the game. Okay? Are we going to run the ball now? We're losing 17-10.
Surely.
No. The first play is a screen pass to Marcus Davis for 1 yard. And in the second play, Sean drops back again, gets sacks, and fumbles.
And that wasn't a fumble, by the way. That's the most BS fumble call I've ever seen in my life. His arm was going forward. The ball was going forward. Every time referees have ever, in the history of instant replay in football, every time they have ever reviewed a play like that, they have always 100% of the time consistently said, if there's any arm moving forward, ball moving forward, it's an incomplete pass. Do you remember the Florida game of 2006?
Yes.
When Little Ball of Hate tackled, what's his name that was the other quarterback that shared time with?
Leak.
Yeah, Leak. Chris Leak, right? Tackled him. He was more throwing the ball then than Sean White was. And they called it he was less throwing the ball then than Sean White was, and they called it a fumble. You know what I'm trying to say.
They called it an incomplete pass.
They called it an incomplete pass on Sean. They called it a fumble on Chris Leak, and Chris Leak was
No, they called it a fumble on Sean and an incomplete pass at Chris Leak, you're saying.
In real life, okay, they called it a fumble in both occasions.
Right.
And I'm just saying that Sean was throwing it more than Chris Leak was.
I gotcha.
Okay.
All right. So he fumbles.
It made sense to me originally. I don't know where I went.
Okay. He fumbles. Georgia picks it up. They kick a field goal. It's now 20-10, and we're down 2 scores, okay?
Yeah, and the defense gets credit for holding to a field goal there.
It was a huge series. But, again, the defense played one of the best defenses. I mean, Georgia's offense is bad, okay? But the defense played one of the best defensive games that Auburn defense has played in years.
Yes.
Then we get the drive where we drive all the way down the field, 7 runs, 5 passes, 1 penalty on Georgia, leads to the Ricardo fumble at the 1 yard line. That was, you know, again, a key. At that point, you're thinking it's over.
Right.
But we stop them. Again, the defense comes up big. We stop them basically without gaining a first down.
Use all of our timeouts.
All 3 timeouts. They punt the ball. We get the ball in pretty good field position. Okay. What do? We take 2 minutes and 56 seconds. To run 6 plays and go 42 yards.
That's all okay. Fast, John.
That was the worst clock management in a key situation that I've seen in a long time. We ran 6 plays in 3 minutes with no timeouts, down 2 scores, the clock running down. We only got 42 yards. Okay, and then we had to kick a field goal because we didn't get a first down at the end, and then we had to do the onside kick. That was terrible clock management. I mean, when the game is on the line, number one, we ran a play where we had freaking fullback in the game, and we couldn't take him out. Not Chandler Cox, the other one.
Right, Yeah, I remember.
And so then we can't take him out because we don't have a timeout and the clock's running. We don't throw an incomplete pass. So he has to line up as the slot receiver. Well, Georgia's not scared of us throwing him the ball. So they're not bothering it. And so we basically have, you know, a useless guy in the formation. And we had to do that about three or four plays in a row in that series. So it was just – it was a really, really – and then at one point, you know, the clock's running and Jeremy's looking over at the sideline. They changed the play and changed the formation. It cost us about 30 seconds. I mean, it was really a terrible two-minute drill by Auburn in that scenario. And it led to the – you know, us kicking the field goal and then doing the onside kick, and it didn't matter. So, but that I had to go back and write that stuff down because, again, how many times out of all that did we hand the ball off to Jovan Robinson? Twice, you know, and I wish, you know, the other 20 plays, we handed him the ball about 18 of them. And I think, and that we should have, you know, if you don't trust your quarterback, quit trying to throw the ball. Throwing it sideways or for 1 yard and stuff isn't helping. Just line up. I mean, go Tupperville. Run the ball and just punt it and play defense.
Would you like to know how the running stacked up? I think this is very informative.
Sure.
Sony Michel, 26 carries, 77 yards, an average of 3. They shut him down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But he got 26 carries.
Yeah.
Okay. Jovan Robinson got 16 yards more than Sony Michel on 12 carries. That's an average of 7.8.
All right. He should have had 12 carries a quarter.
Yes. Peyton Barber had actually 13 carries, and he had 72 yards, 5.5 average. Get this, Jeremy Johnson had 7 carries for a 4.4 average going forward, and that, I guess, includes the sacks. Mm-hmm. Ricardo Lewis had 2 carries for 14 yards, a 7-yard average. Kerryon Johnson had 2 carries for 10 yards, an average of 5. When you are able to crank out 7.8, 5.5, 4.4, 7.0, and 5.0 out of your running back and related running type players, how do you lose? Especially when the defense holds the team down like that.
Because you choose not to give those players the ball. That's how.
Well, you know what you end up with because you choose that?
What?
You end up with 4 receivers catching passes. Marcus Davis caught 8. Guess how many yards? 8.
It was like 20.
31, yeah. This is not an average for a fullback on the dive, okay? This is an average for a receiver catching the ball. 3.9.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Tony Stevens' average reception yardage was?
Out of 3 or 4?
1.0. Mm-hmm. I sound like Dean Faber. Dean Wormer at Faber, right?
1.0.
That's no way to go through life, son. 1.0 receiving yards is no way to go through life, son.
Fat, drunk, and stupid.
Yes, well, you know, I think that's kind of how I was wanting to be at the end of that game. All right, well,
here's one thing, a couple things I want to throw at you about this game, okay?
Okay.
One thing is, I think that Jeremy Pruitt is in Gus and Rhett's head. Ever since, in the national title game, Auburn moved the ball well and did great against them. Since then, we had last year's Georgia game and this year's Georgia game, and no team, I think, has the kind of defensive success against them that Jeremy Pruitt does. And I think it's the kind of thing where his scheme and the way he plays them, he really has some ideas about how to play them, and I think they outsmart themselves sometimes they're playing them. Georgia was the number – here's the other thing about our quarterbacks are playing poorly – okay, Georgia was like the number one pass defense in the SEC coming into the game.
Well, then we need to throw the ball immediately with our 2 quarterbacks that are not really able to play right now.
Yeah. So here's the other question I have for you. Should Sean White have been in the game?
No. Based on what I saw, he had no business being in the game.
I don't understand how you could watch him practice and warm-ups or think he should have been in the game. I don't care what he says.
Especially not if you're going to give him plays, which are, you know, the ones I despise.
The roll out, look around.
Stand back there, survey the field, and get sacked.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that. I want my offense to be proactive, moving forward, pressing, pressing. That's why I loved the when Cam was the quarterback. It's why I loved when Nick Marshall was a quarterback, because they never hardly did that. Even when they would do that, they had a purpose in mind and they were going. I mean, Sean just goes back there, looks around. There's nothing there, and there's nothing for him to do.
And Georgia knows that he can't run. Right. So they know they got him cornered. They can go to more traditional pass rush kind of thing. And you saw in that one play, it was like 3rd and 3, and he rolled out. He had wide open grass in front of him where he maybe could have run for it and dove for the thing, and he had no interest in that.
Yeah.
He threw it, and it was an incomplete pass. And that was a big play.
So. Well, and do we know anything about Golston?
I haven't heard anything. There could be something out there, but I haven't heard it. So.
All right. Well, this transitions us to the other thing you had mentioned, which I think is kind of where I'm going with this. And I need your help with this, John, because I mean, I'm going to be honest. All right, for just a second here, I'm hurting about this, not for Auburn losing a football game. I mean, good Lord, we're not a team that goes undefeated every other year. We're used to struggling. We're used to riding that roller coaster. I put that little chart together a while back of how we have seen the peaks and the valleys just up and down, like we get whiplash from looking at it. But what I'm hurting about is I've been as strong a defender and proponent of Gus Malzahn and this coaching staff as anybody. Is that fair?
I was looking back at our old columns the other day. And there was the who should Auburn hire,
yes,
after Chizik column.
Yes.
And I want to say that here's the names that were on my list, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was like Gary Patterson, mm-hmm, Art Briles,
the Boise State guy.
Jimbo Fisher, Chris Peterson, and Gus Malzahn. And Gus was third or whatever. And yours was like Malzahn, 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 and I can't even remember who the fifth guy was.
I think it was Gus Malzahn.
No, there was somebody else at the end, but you had somebody else like fifth.
That was just tacked on.
It may have been Pat Dye, but
noted hurry up offense guru.
So even then, before he was the coach, you have been a huge proponent of Gus. So I'm sorry I interrupted you. Keep going.
No, absolutely. That's to my point. I mean, you're reinforcing my point, and therefore, this is why I'm coming to you now with an open heart, and I mean this sincerely, really. I have backed Gus for so long and so hard that I need you to look me in the virtual eye. This is where we need video, but we'll get it next year. But I need you to look me in the eye, and I need you to, because, John, all the people on Twitter, I love some of them a lot. But I don't trust them the way I trust you, right? You and I have a relationship in football, mm-hmm, that goes back too many years. Many years.
Yep, long time.
Yes, I trust you, okay? Am I letting how I've supported Gus and I love this offense, and I love 2010, 2013, everything else, am I letting that get in the way of some reality that is new this year that I need to see and I'm not seeing?
Are you saying, should you have doubts? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying, am I intentionally looking past or away from things I need to be looking at when I defend him and think that people are absolutely bug nuts crazy to want to do anything about, other than maybe the assistant staff, some, you know, movement here or there? You're thinking about it.
I'm thinking about it because
I was hoping you'd say no.
I mean, the simple answer is no. Okay. I mean, but
did he forget how to coach? And I just don't realize it.
No, I mean, no, he didn't.
I mean, I think this is something that our listeners want to hear. This is something that people have been asking, and we need to. I want to address
it. Okay. All right. There's a couple things here. The first is that and I'm not being unfair about this. Mm-hmm. We are the quickest jerk the rug out from under people university that exist in college football.
All right, hold that thought. I want to address that very specifically because I've seen that pop up a couple of times, and I have a very, very – I have a very strong opinion about that, okay?
Okay.
We are the anti-Georgia, right?
We are.
There's a reason for that. They're in a state with Georgia freaking Tech, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're in a state with Alabama. They can go 10 years with a mediocre coach, and it's okay. We lose to Florida every year, you know. We'll never get to the SEC championship game, but we once every 5, 6, 7 years and probably lose it. But that's okay because, you know, we're in a state with Georgia Tech. We beat them every year. It's all good. Auburn is in a state with Alabama. We're in the SEC West. We can't mess around like that. We realize that if you let things get bad and out of control, they will get bad and out of control. And we move swiftly and with purpose. Do you remember that? You don't remember. I don't even remember. But did you know that in like 1980, when Auburn fired Doug Barfield, this just sums it up, right? This little slice of history just sums up exactly what I'm talking about in the Auburn, Georgia, how we treat our coaches mindset, mm-hmm. okay? When, you know, Barfield had us going nowhere fast, right? He had us going in reverse, right? He had one of the best offensive backfields in the history of college football, and we were going 5-6 every year, losing to Wake Forest, right?
You know, I saw that team. Multiple NFL running backs, and we were terrible.
Joe Cribbs, James Brooks, William Andrews, all on the same team. We were losing to Wake Forest like 45-40. Okay, here's the deal. After 5 years, which, I mean, my gosh, plenty of time, right? Your father addresses this in the book, in the Lorenzo book. Yeah. We gave him 5 years of rope, Barfield, okay? And then we fired him and went out to get, well, first tried to get Vince Dooley and then ended up getting Pat Dye. I wonder if our younger Auburn listeners out there know that we tried really, really hard to get Vince Dooley when we fired Doug Barfield and couldn't get him away from Georgia because that was the year they had just won the national championship and he had Herschel Walker as a freshman.
Herschel Walker coming back. So.
Yeah, and so he says, no thanks. And so we went and got Pat Dye as our backup plan out of Wyoming. All right, so East Carolina, Wyoming, wherever he was. Okay, so he was at Wyoming. That's right. He started East Carolina with Wyoming. So when we fire Barfield after 5 years of absolute mediocrity, Louis Grizzard, the most famous Georgia fan of the day, wrote a column called Doug Barfield, and the whole thing was criticizing Auburn for being so quick and so harsh as to fire Doug Barfield. And he ended it with a very sarcastic war eagle. And I look at that column even today, and I just think, this is the difference between Auburn and Georgia. They'd have given Barfield 12 to 15 years of 5-6 seasons because, hey, beats Tech, right? And here's the other thing about that. I know I'm going on too long about it, but this is something I feel very strongly about. The other thing about it is this. I was talking to a Latin American fellow that I was watching a World Cup game with one time back when Tuberville was our coach. And we were talking about how Brazil had a new coach at the World Cup. And he said, oh, Brazil has a new coach at every World Cup. We never bring the same coach to two World Cups in a row. And I say, why is that? And he says, because the other teams figure out what you're doing. You have to come up with something new and brilliant every single time or they'll catch up to you. And I was so glad to hear that because I said, see, now I don't feel so bad about Auburn being so quick on the trigger because we're like Brazil, right? We want to win, and we are willing to keep changing coaches out as much as necessary to accomplish that. And you know, when we've done it, we got rid of Barfield, brought in Pat Dye. You know the great years we had there. Yeah. Things kind of went bad for him for a couple of years. He's gone. We bring in Terry Bowden. We win 20 games in a row. Things go south for him. He's gone. We bring in Tommy Tuberville. We had the 2004 season, 5, 6, 7. Things go bad for him in 08. He's gone. We bring in Gene Chizik. We win the national championship. We have one bad year with Chizik. He's gone. We bring in Gus Malzahn. That's how we operate, people. And if you don't like it, quit being an Auburn fan because that's who we are. That's our history. That is our nature. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I'm applauding. That was dramatic. But after that speech, the next sentence is,
yep,
Gus Malzahn is struggling.
It is. And see, the difference is Dye was in his, you know, last days, and that was obvious for a variety of reasons. Terry Bowden had started 20-0. He then went like 24-20 his last 44 games.
Well, and some of those last recruiting classes were jokes.
Were jokes. They were the most wanted list. I was a big Tuberville supporter in 03 during Jetgate, but honestly, by 08, I was ready to turn the page. And Chizik, you could see the team chemistry, the team discipline, everything just disintegrating before your eyes. That had to be done. It was just obvious, right? I don't feel like that's the case now, and that's why I've brought this to you. I want you to tell me that this is not a systemic problem that requires massive surgery. Tell me that this is something that is a technical issue that can be corrected.
I think it's a technical issue that can be corrected.
All right.
First of all, we're not in the...
Okay.
I think the number one thing, I mean, and we said this multiple times, this offense has to have either, you know, mm-hmm. a great and accurate passing quarterback or mm-hmm. a quarterback that can run and pass mm-hmm. or a great offensive line and running back, okay? Mm-hmm. And when it's got more than two of those things, you're going to kill people.
How many of those things has it had this year?
Zero.
Thank you very much.
So
this is what I've said from day one.
Well, but I think some of it is there and they won't use it.
That's true. That's true.
Robinson is that guy. That
blame yourself.
You see the plays he makes, that one play where he kind of went around the end and yes. he cut back. He was like a sports car.
Yes.
And I thought, oh my gosh, why aren't we giving this guy the ball 40 times a game?
Absolutely.
I don't understand it.
Can you imagine Tuberville in 2000 with Rudy Johnson comes out in the first quarter, has three or four runs, comes out in the second quarter, really getting warmed up, five or six runs. He's got about 70 yards now. And in the fourth, and in the second half, will you give him about three carries?
Yeah. No.
Can you see Tubbs doing that?
Good gosh, no. He ran Carnell Williams into the ground. Let's be clear. Here's the difference. Carnell Williams had 43 carries against Georgia. So that would be like, let's put Kerryon Johnson back there. Give him 43 carries. Okay? But guess what? It worked.
It did.
So this is where I think offensive coaches, as a rule, try to – you know, see what the defense is giving them and be smart to counter and all that stuff. And sometimes you don't need to do that. You just need to keep going with the bread and butter, feed your good players the ball. And the only player on the Auburn offense that I trust with the ball right now, well, there was only two. The three running backs.
Yeah.
Robinson number one, Barber number two, and Kerryon Johnson number three. Nobody else needs to touch the ball.
That's it.
Okay, and I don't care if we came out in the Wildcat with Barber and Robinson behind him, like we were running the wishbone or something. Great, fine with it. I don't care. We don't need a regular quarterback. We don't need to throw the ball again. I just one of those guys could come, like Robinson came across in the sweep a couple times in the Georgia game. We could do that. We could have him on the sweep. We could have Barber running straight ahead, or we could have Kerryon Johnson keeping it. We could just do that the whole game. I'd be fine.
Players make so much more difference than people are even willing to understand. I mean, they make coaches look like idiots or like geniuses.
But this is a case where they have some of the players and they don't use them because they're trying to be smart.
Look at last year's Iron Bowl. We threw for like 7,000 yards against Alabama. What's different this year? Is it a different Gus? Is it a different Rhett? No. It's that our two receivers, one's in the NFL, and the other one is, I have no idea where. And our quarterback is in the NFL.
And again, we need to. This system just reinforces we need to start building the Nick Marshall statue right now.
It's unbelievable.
Because he was amazing. I knew it was coming. soon as I said his name. Nick Marshall was great, and in the Alabama game, he destroyed him.
He looks better every day, doesn't he, in the rearview mirror? That picture gets a little bigger, and it shines a little brighter every day.
Well, and here's the – so because what we really lack ultimately at the end of the day, even outside of the – you know, we don't have anybody on the same planet as Sammy Coates and Duke Williams on the current team, is consistent quarterback play. I'm one of those people – I don't believe that this offense has to have a running quarterback. I don't believe that.
Right. Ryan Applin was great for Arkansas State in 2012.
Well, but maybe in the SEC you need a little more mobility, okay? But you know what? If you don't have that
– relatively.
If you don't have mobility, you have to have somebody who has a good arm and is very accurate. And we don't have any of those
things. Well, we thought that was Sean White. But we got him beaten to death after the
first. Well, that's the thing. Like, I genuinely think Sean White could excel in this offense. I think this offense could be great with Sean White. Can Sean White take the pounding of an SEC schedule for 12 games? I don't know.
If Sean White had Texas A&M's receivers, or at least receivers with the hype that those guys got, and he had a Javon Robinson at the top of his game behind him, he could be Brandon Cox.
Yes, he could. And if Sean White could just, you know, wasn't getting the crap beat out of him the whole time, I think he'd be fine. I think he'd be like Brandon Cox. And I think this offense would take off.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that he can take the pounding because this offense does require the quarterback to run sometimes.
It does.
You know, he's taken a beating in these games and he's gotten the crap beat out of him. So I think that's part of it. I think. You know, you have to have a quarterback who can physically take it, and I'm not sure that he can.
Well, the thing that worries me is that Gus, with his brilliant schemes, can come in and do like Terry Bowden did, take over a team that's got some good talent already.
Mm-hmm.
Again, even though he's the one that recruited it, and I've always made that joke on Twitter that Gus in 2013 only won with the players that Malzahn recruited.
Mm-hmm.
But still, he comes in with those players. And then I worry that because we've dropped off so much over the last season and all of this season, that even if he can go out and find the quarterback, that the other positions on the field will start suffering a little bit because players will be like, oh, Auburn's, you know, not what we thought they were anymore, and they'll start looking elsewhere. We fight this fight in recruiting every year, which is we have a good year and we try to get players in, and then we have a crap year and we start losing them and we have to start all over again selling the brand. It just makes me sick that there's programs like Alabama that just roll their helmets out there and say, you know who we are, you know what we're going to be every year, right? We have to refight the hearts and minds winning battle with high school players every year from scratch.
But here's the other part. They're like, I think Sammy Coates getting the NFL and doing well in the NFL will help us. And I think if Duke Williams gets drafted, theoretically, that would help us too. But because you got to be able to convince some good wide receivers to come. And running backs, it's not going to be a problem. We're going to get running backs. We're going to get offensive linemen. We've got some good. We're going to get more good defensive linemen. This is the other thing we haven't talked about is, with the changing whatever, we changed defensive coordinators like 4 times in 6 years.
Yes.
And we have got to keep the entire – I'm going to say this. We got to keep the entire defensive coaching staff intact for like 2 more years, okay? Yeah. So everybody, you know, put down your butcher knives and stuff about getting rid of this guy or that guy. Here's the difference, okay? You see – go watch Clemson's defense. Watch those guys play, watch those guys tackle. It isn't coaching, and it isn't even that much recruiting. It's that everybody on that team has been there. All the coaches have been the same, and the players in that defense have been in the system at least 3 years. Mm-hmm. They don't have a starter that's a freshman, and they don't have a starter that's a transfer. They have guys that have been there at least 3 years starting on that defense. So they know what to do and what to expect. And they're not out there training guys as the year goes along, whatever, like we are. So I think if Muschamp doesn't get offered a big head coaching job and he hangs around, I think you could see it the last 2 weeks. Our defense is going to be fine.
Yes.
We're going to be so much better. Good enough. So, but, you know, I told you in an email, like, if I was a defensive player, I'm looking at the offensive guys the same way that the offensive guys looked at the defensive guys after the Iron Bowl last year. Like, what? We got to do it all? We got to do everything?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do anything to help us? So,
I don't even want to think or talk about the Iron Bowl.
Well, we're not talking about this week, but I'm just saying, like, no, I think the defense and it's clear, even with the talent we have right now, the defense is going to be fine in the long run if we, you know, with this coaching staff, okay?
Yeah.
So then the question is, can Malzahn and Lash and them fix the offense? And I think they can. I think we just had really, really crappy quarterback play this year. And I think, you know, I think they can figure it out. I think they can, you know, whether it's through recruiting or, we've got this guy coming over, the JUCO guy, who was at Florida State, who's supposed to be like a Nick Marshall clone.
And we've got a signee
and we've got a guy we're redshirting who's, you know, but he's, you know, Queen is more of a,
he's more of a Sean White.
And so, or maybe Sean White with a year in the weight room could be, you know, could do, but I mean, at this stage, I love Jeremy Johnson. I wish he would succeed. I don't trust him.
No.
And it's very clear the coaches don't trust him either.
No, I'm down now.
So, I mean, I think that's where it's going to go. So,
you know, I think we're going to look back at this season and we're going to say that the turning point in a bad way was that overtime Arkansas game.
We got killed one game.
Yep, okay? One game. That's right. One game we've gotten really beat.
We should have beat Mississippi State. We should have beaten Arkansas. We should have beaten Ole Miss. And we should have beaten that freaking Georgia team this weekend.
Think about this. In every game we've lost this – let me rephrase that. This season right now, for all that's wrong, for all that we have acknowledged is wrong, okay, right now we are one play away in every game from being exactly where we were at this point in 2013. We are one play away in every game from being exactly where we were at this point in 2013. Because if we had one play against LSU, we'd still lose to them. Well, we lost to them in 2013, right? So we are one play away in every game from being exactly where we were in 2013. Just think about that for a minute.
See, that's the other thing when I say, like, you say, like, should you still have faith in Gus, whatever. That's what I think about, like, We're not getting – this isn't a 2012 situation where we're getting our brains beat in every week. Okay? It's not.
No. And the
we're in the games and we're making plays and it's just not going our way right now. But a lot of it is because we're playing with like one hand – they're playing offense with like one hand tied behind their back because the quarterback situation is so iffy.
Yeah.
So I think that's – and that's been the way it's been all year.
Yeah. I actually feel better about things right now.
Talking through this and you're getting therapy on the radio.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel better about it now. And all I do.
I don't know if everybody else can feel it. I mean,
I don't care. I was pretty low coming in, I got to tell you. So.
We hate Georgia. I grew up in Atlanta. Half my high school went to Georgia. Half my high school class went to Georgia.
I lived in Atlanta for years.
And we hate Georgia. I hate losing to Georgia. So.
Yes. Ugh. All right. Well, I wanted to talk about the hoops game. We don't have much time left now, and this is entirely my fault. But I
blame yourself.
I do, but I want to. We mentioned it. Did I miss something? Go ahead.
No, I'll keep going.
Well, I just wanted to say that we need to recognize. I was joking about the beginning, but the basketball team won a spectacular win, and they look great, and they're getting more players in that weren't playing in that game.
We were missing four key guys in that game.
They went out there and played with like four guys on the court and beat UAB, you know? I mean, you know, I had all the stats here and everything. I'm not going to go into them now, but we'll be talking more about this basketball team, I think, before things are over, and that's very, very good. And if you don't like basketball, I'm sorry, because this is a basketball team you're going to like if you're an Auburn fan. Let's just go on ahead into some of the best of...
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
What we got?
All right.
This should be very good.
Introducing first questions from the AU Wishbone at gmail.com account.
Woo!
And our first question comes from George McCrary.
Yay, George.
One of our favorite listeners.
Yes.
And he says, this is an interesting question for you, okay? Why is it that other teams can switch quarterbacks, lose quarterbacks, go through all kinds of adversity and still win, but we can't? And he said, I'm referring specifically to the number of teams in our conference who had quarterback switches this year, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, even, you know, Missouri.
Texas A&M and Missouri didn't.
You know, Missouri still won a few games with their going to their freshman quarterback.
So did we.
So.
I think that it depends on the system and it depends on who the quarterback is. I mean, if the freshman we brought in was young Cam Newton Jr., it might be a little bit different than you know, bringing in a Sean White who just needed more, like you said, needed more time in the weight room, needed more practice and everything. I don't know.
All right, next question comes from Scott Schrader, who says, I'm not sad, I'm not mad, I'm just vexed and perplexed by the abandonment of our core offensive philosophy after a successful first quarter. What gives here?
They do that all the time. I don't understand it. That's the $64,000 question.
All right. Next question comes from Auburn Elvis.
People never like our answers, but I'm doing the best I can. I love our questioners, I love our listeners, but when you're and they're fine questions. They're absolutely dead on questions. The problem is, a lot of our questions that we get are questions that if we knew the answer to, we could call up Gus and say, Gus, we've got it. We can't do that. We don't know.
All right, you ready?
I wish we knew.
Auburn Elvis says, has there been any discussion about switching the podcast to covering Auburn soccer or possibly equestrian, where we regularly beat Georgia and Alabama?
I'm thinking about making it a book club discussion. I thought we could just talk about Stargate Universe tonight, honestly. That's what I've been kind of focusing on this weekend.
All right. Jack Kennedy, who's at the Real Jack K73, says, Is just why an appropriate question?
Yeah, it is. And I don't know is an appropriate answer. I mean, we've danced around it, but.
Don't have facts to back this up.
There you go.
Albert Tweet posts a good comment here, a good question. Basically, there were three plays that people don't think about that really were a big difference in the game. And when we had pushed them back with the penalties and the sacks and stuff, they had 3rd and 41 on their end.
Yes.
And they had a 20-yard run. Oh. We were back basically playing a prevent defense. We had guys way down the field. We gave them a 20-yard run, and then they punted. Mm-hmm. Marcus Davis did not catch the punt, and we ended up with the ball at the 6-yard line. We should have got the ball about 30.
Yes.
Okay. So those two, and then.
That's the longest. I was telling my wife, that's the longest I can remember. Other than there was a Miami-Texas game one time when I think Miami had one of their huge linemen and he kept sacking the Texas quarterback. And I think they were at like 4th and 55.
Mm-hmm.
That was just crazy. But this was the longest one I can remember since then, probably. And I absolutely thought that it was going to pay dividends for us and we didn't get squat out of it.
WDE to you basically asked. My question for the panel was, why would Gus quit running the ball? He was, you know, it seems like he was hell bent on quitting running the ball.
Yeah. That's it.
All right. Byron P. Jones says, with JJ a head case and Sean a peg leg, is there any chance that Jason Smith or Jonathan Wallace get snaps against Idaho?
No, because those guys with those problems are still better options than the other two, I'm afraid. I hate to say it, but it's true.
Well, I mean, you wonder like if we did the Jason Smith thing, but it's too late for that
it's
now.
That
ship sailed a long time ago.
That ship is in the West Indies.
All right. Rusty Owens asked a good question. I think, do you recall a season where the Auburn fan base has been more divided?
Well, when we were trying to hire a coach, they were pretty divided.
No, but during the season.
Man. How far back do you want me to think?
Let me just think for a second. Do you remember one where – because there's a lot of fans, you know, that that are really, really unhappy and want to, you know, fire Gus tomorrow.
That's See, that's why I had this existential crisis a while ago. Is because,
well, but
I'm seeing people on Twitter saying stuff like this, and I'm like, have you fools lost your freaking minds?
Well, but here's the other thing. Okay,
that's why I asked you for your opinion, because you I trust. I don't trust them. I'm sorry. But they make me crazy.
It's like, you know, you don't read the comments on an AL.com article. Okay?
Oh, my gosh. Broken glass in your eye before reading the comments on that.
Well, but I'm saying you don't go stick your head in the water, read Twitter like for a bad football loss, because it's just going to be like ugliness.
Well, it's never been like this. It's never been in the Gus era like this, though.
No, but I mean, it has been bad at times.
Even from people that I say I don't. I value you folks' opinions. I really do. And I love you all. But some of you were making me a little crazy last night, okay? You just needed to step back.
Sometimes it's, you know. I get it. People aren't happy. But it's also like you need to just put the phone down and walk away for a while sometimes, maybe.
Yes. You need to hang up and listen.
Well.
You need to go to AL.com message board and rub glass in your eyes. That'll
stop.
Break me out.
That won't help at all.
Oh,
all right. Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom, says, what else can go wrong? So many injuries and unexpected issues. Is next season here yet? Can we forget this one?
You know what? We can concentrate on getting the kicker award.
The Lou Groza Award?
God, he ought to win that.
I'd agree with that.
The Florida State kicker that wins everything is not having as good of a year this year.
No. Ross Hatcher says, what are the requirements to officially become a basketball school?
You know, we've talked about that before, but yeah, I'm aiming the bus that way right now. I tell you, we've only got, you know, it's funny. Depending on the bowl game, we may have no more competitive football games the rest of the year. Cause we know that how the Idaho game, I guess. We know how the Idaho game's going to go, and I guess we know how the other one's going to go. So, you know, we really don't have a competitive game again until our bowl game, which now is likely to be played on, like, December 17th or something ridiculous.
That's fine. Get it over with.
Get it over with. Amen.
All right. You know, lots of time to practice, play the freshman, which I got one more other thing I want to say. Your guy, Steven Roberts, you didn't know who he was. He had a great game on Saturday.
He did. Yes. I was impressed.
Yeah, you know what? He made a lot more plays than Trey Matthews has been making when he was in the game. So.
He did. We got any more questions?
No, that's it.
Factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
Here's your factoid of the week. I'm ticked off. Moving on. All right. We play in Idaho, John. What do we know about Idaho other than they're coached by a Petrino? All right, and they suck.
That's all you need to know.
All right, here we go.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
All right. Well, when Auburn loses early, we always have the possibility dangling before us that Bama could lose too. And once again, Mississippi State played down to their identity and screwed it all up and made us miserable. Way to go, Mississippi State. Way to hang two field goals on Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I fast-forwarded on five triangles on UVerse. For those of you that have UVerse, you know what I mean. I had that sucker on five triangles. I watched the Alabama-Mississippi State game. In about 8 minutes, okay, and I just kept watching it go 7-0, 14-0, 21-0, and I'm just like, ugh. Up 21-3, 28-3, just like, ugh. So, what was that all about? And make your answer in less than 10 seconds.
I mean, this is a much worse Mississippi State team than last year, and Alabama's playing well. Dak couldn't do anything. There's nobody else on the team who can make a play. So.
Ugh.
Well, let me say this. They sacked Dak like 10 times, I think.
Because he's all they had, right?
Yeah, but they got a lot of pass rush in that game.
Alabama's playing the best right now of any team in the conference, right?
Any team in the country, probably.
Oh, boy. I don't like it.
Nope.
They're going to end up playing they could end up playing Ohio State again.
They could.
How weird would that be? Arkansas. What? Arkansas hammered LSU.
And you know what? Everybody wrote off. Everybody said, oh, Bird, you know, they started terrible again this year. They're going to do the same freaking thing again.
Yep.
They got Mississippi State coming up this weekend and Missouri after that. They're going to win both those games. They're going to finish second in the West. Arkansas.
A team that lost to Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
And took four overtimes to beat us.
Yeah.
What if you told Arkansas fans before the season that they were going to lose to Toledo and beat LSU?
They'd take it.
But I mean, well, yeah, they'd take it, but I mean, they'd think you're crazy. What person in their right mind?
Nobody would believe that, but they're playing well. They're really, really playing well.
Kentucky, Kentucky, Kentucky.
They're back to being sucky Kentucky.
Sucky Kentucky, the Mildcats. Oh, the Mildcats. Sucky, sucky Kentucky.
You got to give Vanderbilt some credit, though. They're playing better.
They are playing better. They probably beat our butts right now. Florida, South Carolina, 24-14. I didn't see a second of this game. I'm assuming that Florida just went out there and did their usual Florida stuff, right?
That's it.
Should I be wishing that we would fire Gus and hire McElwain?
We're not getting it.
The overgrown giant toddler?
No. This is the other thing. Like, I just want to throw this out there to all the fire Gus tomorrow people.
Mm-hmm.
A, there's going to be like 25 coaching vacancies, okay?
Yes, yes.
And B, who are you going to get that's better?
And honestly, the coaches that people talk about have had crap years too. And there's coaches right now
they're completely unknown commodities. I mean, you could have fired Gus and hired Justin Fuente from Memphis.
Stanford's not happy with their coach. Oregon's not happy with their coach. Texas is not even happy with their coach. Texas A&M's not happy with their coach. Florida State getting mad at Jimbo. They lost a couple of games. I mean, everywhere you go, right? Everywhere you go, people are angry at their coach. It's just how it is, right? There's no answer to this. Other than Nick Saban just robotically winning, 11 games every year.
Let's be clear. Oklahoma had one of the biggest wins of the season Saturday night, beating Baylor.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of Oklahoma fans would have fired Bob Stoops a year or two ago.
Absolutely. And they lost to Texas this year.
That's right. And they'd have fired him after that game, but they were going to make the playoffs, I think. So.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. A&M snuck past Western Carolina.
That was actually, you're joking, but it was like 17-10 in the second half.
Oh, gosh. That's funny. Tennessee shut out North Texas. Didn't get your money's worth that one. Let's move on to what's coming up. We have a pretty good couple of games this coming week. Is this the weekend that Alabama plays? Are they off or they play a Charleston Southern Teachers College?
Oh, they play somebody bad. I didn't list them, but they play somebody terrible.
Okay. LSU at Ole Miss. You got to think LSU is reeling now and Ole Miss wants to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and it's at Oxford. Alabama's playing Charleston Southern, so.
Yeah. A noted basketball school.
So, I mean, LSU really is kind of on the ropes, but, Ole Miss isn't doing great either, so it should be a good game, though.
Mississippi State at Arkansas.
My cold, dead hands. Lock of
the
week.
The thing of it is, I really don't know which one of them to lock.
You can't play the sound and not lock one of them.
I'm going to go ahead and lock up Arkansas. It's like you said, they're at the point now that they were at the end of last year where they're suddenly looking really good and beating everybody. And it's so weird.
And Mississippi State's got the, beaten up by Alabama week after thing.
Yeah, that's a thing. So let's go ahead and jump on Arkansas. Tennessee at Missouri. That should be an interesting trip for Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if there'll be anybody camped out in tents on the 50-yard line.
Yeah. And Missouri's defense is really good, but they can't score. Tennessee's going to win that game.
Well, so you're saying that Missouri's end zone will not be a safe space.
Just stay away from this.
Texas A&M at Vanderbilt. Should Texas A&M worry?
Yes.
Yes. Are they going to score anything?
Vanderbilt is really good on defense. This is actually – they should be careful there.
Man, I Vandy's got a guy who knows how to coach defense. There's no doubt. I mean, they were a transition in work in progress last year, but I thought they were going to fire him, but he knows what he's doing. Florida Atlantic at Florida, you got to think Florida's got that in the bag. They've already locked up their ticket to Atlanta, and McElwain's going to be SEC Coach of the Year surely. And who actually beat Florida? Not Ole Miss. They beat Florida beat the mess out of Ole Miss. Who beat Florida?
LSU. That was the week after their quarterback got suspended.
So they only lost that one game. It was LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay. They still got to play Florida State.
Yeah.
That'd be a big game. And then they'll, Alabama will kill them. That'll be it.
That's true. They do have to go to Atlanta, and they're not going to do very well there. I'll be the biggest Florida fan ever, but gosh, I just can't tell you how much I love Alabama-Florida SEC championship games, John. Probably one-third of all SEC championship games have been Florida-Alabama. Barf. I need a gagging sound on here.
I was hoping for an asteroid to hit the stadium every time.
Oh, yeah, that's the asteroid game. That's the meteorite game, absolutely. Citadel at South Carolina. This is the I wish I had the theme music on here to House of Cards. Yeah. This is the House of Cards special. But yeah, you know, the South Carolina. And then Georgia Southern. Well, this is the crap game weekend. Gosh, Georgia Southern. This is the weekend that we played Alabama State. I don't mean a crap team. I just lower division, you know. Georgia Southern's good.
Everybody's playing these games before their rivalries.
Yeah, Georgia Southern could beat Georgia.
And this year, it's not a particularly good Georgia Southern team. I don't have a lot of hope. But
okay, and then UNC Charlotte at Kentucky. What time does that game tip off? UNC Charlotte at Kentucky, seriously?
Yep.
They had to have scheduled that because they're having a basketball game at the same time, right? Or right?
They should have both schools play football and basketball back-to-back.
Back-to-back? That's
brilliant.
Somebody needs to shoot a three-pointer at some point in the football game. Just chuck the football at the goalpost from way outside. Oh, man. All right. We're done with this. What have we learned tonight? I mean, I know what I've learned, but you tell me what you've learned.
Well, we've learned that you're angry.
I don't know if that's the right word. I'm angry at Twitter, but I have other feelings about Auburn.
I think you have strong feelings about the coaching changes that Auburn has done over the years.
Yeah,
we went through that.
We did.
And I think we've all learned that Auburn didn't run the ball enough in this game.
Yeah, we knew that.
It's there.
It is.
And we learned we hate losing to Georgia.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, and I think that I learned that maybe I can get off the ledge and have faith that Gus didn't suddenly forget how to coach entirely. And that we were one play away from being exactly where we were in 2013 every game. And as we've said many times on here, John, in the SEC West, the margin of error between first and last in the division is razor thin. It can be one player.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing this year. And we've had five or six or seven players that have flamed out and, you know, for one reason or another. So, all right. Have you seen Spectre yet?
I'm not. I'm sorry.
You need to see Spectre so we can talk about it. We'll get on the White Rocket show. We'll talk about it a little bit because I got stuff to say. All right. We had a Lorenzo signing, John's dad, over the weekend at the Georgia game. He'll be back in Auburn to sign the Lorenzo book and sell copies of it at the Alabama game. I forget which bookstore. I think AU bookstore.
University bookstore.
Yeah, in Haley Center. I've heard of it. Mm-hmm. Spent a lot of time in my life there. And they've also got copies of Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams, so we hope you will check those out. And also, as always, listen to our sister show, the White Rocket Podcast, which is also on iTunes and at Podbean. John, I've had enough therapy for tonight. I'm declaring myself only partly deranged, and I think that we can wrap things up for tonight. So any last words?
My therapy bill is in the mail.
very good. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Alrighty. Thank you very much. That was, I think, helpful.
Alright, it was good.
Go to bed.
Hang in there.